It was the morning after Ronnie Fish, with the assistance of Beach the butler, had removed the prize pig from its sty and hidden it in the gamekeeper's cottage. Hugo Carmody, the Earl's secretary, at his own suggestion had gone up to town to secure the services of a detective named Pilbeam. Both Ronnie and Millicent suspected that Hugo's motives for his mission to town were questionable, and after luncheon, Ronnie climbed into his two-seater and set off for the big city. If you go up Beeston Street in the southwestern postal division of London and follow the pavement on the right-hand side, you come to a blind alley called Hailing Court. If you enter the first building on the left of this blind alley and mount a flight of stairs, you find yourself facing a door, on the ground glass of which is the legend, Argus Inquiry Agency Limited. And below it, to one side, the smaller legend, P. Frobisher Pilbeam, Manager. At about the hour when Ronnie Fish had stepped into his two-seater in the garage of Blandings Castle, P. Frobisher Pilbeam was seated at his desk, reading a telegram which had arrived during his absence at lunch. It ran as follows. Be sure send best man, investigate big robbery. It was unsigned. What made the thing particularly annoying was that it was so tantalizing. A big robbery probably meant jewels with a correspondingly big fee attached to their recovery. But you cannot scour England at random asking people if they've had a big robbery in their neighbourhood. Reluctantly, he gave the problem up, and producing a pocket mirror, began with the aid of a pen nib to curl his small and revolting moustache. His thoughts had drifted now to Sue. They were not altogether sunny thoughts, for the difficulty of making Sue's acquaintance was beginning to irk Percy Pilbeam. He'd written her notes. He had sent her flowers, and nothing had happened. She ignored the notes, and what she did with the flowers he didn't know. She certainly never thanked him for them. Brooding upon these matters, he was interrupted by the opening of the door. The office boy entered.
Mr. Carbody to see you, sir.
Pilbeam once more relegated Sue to the hinterland of his mind. Business was business.
Show him in. This way, sir,
said the office boy, with a graceful courtliness, which, even taking into account the fact that he suffered from adenoids, had an old-world flavour, and Hugo sauntered across the threshold. Hugo felt, and was looking, quietly happy. Nobody could have been more wholeheartedly attached than he to Blandings Castle and the society of his Millicent, but he was finding London revisited singularly attractive. And this, if I mistake not, Watson, is our client now, said Hugo genially. Such was his feeling of universal benevolence that he embraced with his goodwill even the repellent-looking young man who had risen from the desk. He still thought Pilbeam should not have been wearing pimples with a red tie, one or the other if he liked, but not both. Nevertheless, he smiled upon him. "Fine day," he said.
"Quite," said Pilbeam.
Some people might call London a shade on the stuffy side on an afternoon like this, but not Hugo Carmody.
No?
No. H. Carmody finds it just what the doctor ordered. He sat down. "Well, sleuth," he said, "to business. I suppose you want to know what I've come about."
"When you're ready to get round to it," said Pilbeam patiently.
Hugo stretched his long legs comfortably. "Well, I know you detective blokes always want a fellow to begin at the beginning and omit no detail, for there is no saying how important some seemingly trivial fact may be. Omitting birth and early education, then, I am at the moment a private secretary to Lord Emsworth at Blandings Castle in Shropshire."
"Blandings Castle?"
A thought had struck the proprietor of the Argus Inquiry Agency. He fumbled in his desk and produced the mysterious telegram. Yes, as he had fancied, it had been handed in at a place called Market Blandings.
"Do you know anything about this?" he asked, pushing it across the desk.
Hugo glanced at the document. "Oh, the old boy must have sent that after I left," he said. "The absence of signature is no doubt due to mental stress. Lord Emsworth is greatly perturbed. A twitter. Shaken to the core, you might say.
About this robbery?"
"Exactly. It has got right in amongst him." Pilbeam reached for pen and paper. There was a stern, set bloodhound sort of look in his eyes.
"Kindly give me the details."
Hugo pondered a moment. It was a dark and stormy night. No, I'm a liar. The moon was riding serenely in the sky.
"This big robbery. Tell me about it."
Hugo raised his eyebrows.
"Big?"
"The telegram says big." "These telegram operators will try to make sense. The word should be pig. Lord Emsworth pig has been stolen."
"Pig!"
cried Percy Pilbeam. Hugo looked at him a little anxiously. "You know what a pig is, surely? I mean, if not, I'm afraid there's a good deal of tedious spade work ahead of us."
the roseate dreams which the proprietor of the Argus had had of missing jewels broke like bubbles. He was deeply affronted. "Does Lord Emsworth seriously suppose that I have time to waste looking for stolen pigs?" he demanded shrilly. "I never heard such nonsense in my life. One moment, Sleuth. This pig, you see, is a prize pig. Restore the animal in time for the agricultural show, and you may ask of Lord Emsworth what you will, even unto half his kingdom." Percy Philbeam rose. He had heard enough. "I will not trouble Lord Emsworth. The Argosy Inquiry Agency does not detect pigs. Nah, I feared as much. Well, well, so be it." "And now," said Hugo affably, "and may I take advantage of the beautiful friendship which has sprung up between us and use your telephone?" Without waiting for permission, for which, indeed, he would have had to wait some time, he drew the instrument to him and gave a number. He then began to chat again. "You seem a knowledgeable sort of bloke," he said. "Perhaps you can tell me where the village swains go these days when they want to dance upon the green. I've been absent for some little time from the centre of the vortex, and I've become as a child in these matters. What is the best that London has to offer to a young man with his blood up and the fine leaves more or less in his hair?" Philbeam was a man of business. He'd no wish to converse with this client who had disappointed him and wounded his finest feelings, but it so happened that he'd recently bought shares in a rising restaurant. "Mario's," he replied promptly. "It's the only place." A voice from the other end of the wire broke into his reverie. He recognized it as that of the porter of the block of flats where Sue had her tiny abode. "Hello, Bashford. Mr. Carmody speaking. Will you make a long arm and haul Miss Brown to the instrument?" "Miss Sue Brown, of course." "Righty-ho, I'll wait." The astute detective never permits himself to exhibit emotion. Philbeam turned his start of surprise into a grave, distrait nod, as if he were thinking out deep problems. "Mario's, eh?" said Hugo. "What's the band like?" "It's Leopold's." "Oh, good enough for me," said Hugo with enthusiasm. He hummed a bar or two and slid his feet dreamily about the carpet. "I'm shockingly out of practice, Datchet, but touching this other matter, you're sure you won't come to Blandings?"
"Quite."
"Nice place, gravel soil, spreading views, well laid out pleasure grounds, company's own water. I would strongly advise you to bring your magnifying glass and spend the summer. However, if you really feel..." "Sue! Ah, hello, 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 hello. This is Hugo. Yes, just up in town for the night on a mission of extraordinary secrecy and delicacy, which I am not empowered to reveal. Speaking from the Argus Inquiry Agency, by courtesy of the proprietor, I was wondering if you would care to come out and help me restore my lost youth. Starting at about 8:30, eh?" A silence had fallen at the other end of the wire. What was happening was that in the hall of the block of flats, Sue's conscience was fighting a grim battle against heavy odds. Ranged in opposition to it were her loneliness, her love of dancing, and her desire once more to see Hugo, who, though he was not a man one could take seriously, always cheered her up and made her laugh. And she'd been needing a laugh for days. Hugo thought he'd been cut off. "Hello, hello, 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 hello," he barked peevishly. "Look, don't yodel like that," said Sue. "You've nearly made me deaf." "Oh, sorry, dear heart. I thought the machine had conked out. Well, how do you react? Is it a bet?" "Well, I do want to see you again," said Sue, hesitatingly. "You shall, in person. Clean shirt, white waistcoat, the Carmody studs, everything." "Well..." A psychically gifted bystander, standing in the hall of a block of flats, would have heard at this moment a faint moan. It was Sue's conscience collapsing beneath an unexpected flank attack. She just remembered that if she went to dine with Hugo, she would learn all the latest news about Ronnie. It put the whole thing in an entirely different light. "All right," she said. "Where?" "Mario's. They tell me it's the posh spot these days." "Mario's?" "Yes. M for mange, A for asthma, R for rheumatism." "Oh, you got it. Oh, all right then. At 8:30. Hugo put the receiver back. Once more he allowed his dazzling smile to play upon the Argus's proprietor. "Much obliged for use of the instrument," he said. "Thank you." "Thank you," said Philbeam. "Well, I'll be pushing along. Ring us up if you change your mind." Leopold's justly famous band, its cheeks puffed out and its eyeballs rolling, was playing a popular melody with lots of stomp to it. And for the first time since she had accepted Hugo's invitation to the dance, Sue, gliding round the floor, was conscious of spiritual calm. "You won't breathe a word to Ronnie about our coming here, will you, Hugo?" "Not a syllable." I can trust you. Implicitly. Telegraphic address, discretion at market landings." "Ronnie's funny, you see. One long scream. I mean, he wouldn't understand."
"No."
"Great surprise it was to me," said Hugo, doing complicated things with his feet, "to hear that you and the old hound had decided to team up. It may interest you to know that I, too, am engaged.
Hugo?
Yes, betrothed. And so, at long last, came a day when love wound his silken fetters about Hugo Carmody.
Oh, who's the unfortunate girl?
There is no unfortunate girl. The lucky girl.
Was that your foot?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't got the hang of these new steps yet. The lucky girl, I was saying, is Miss Millicent Threepwood. As if stunned by the momentousness of the announcement, the band stopped playing. Hugo led his partner to her chair. She was gazing at him ecstatically.
You don't mean that.
I do mean that. What do you think I meant?
I never heard anything so wonderful in my life. I've been trying not to admit it to myself, but I was very scared about Millicent. Ronnie told me the family wanted him and her to marry, and you never know what may happen when families throw their weight about. And now it's all right.
Quite all right.
Tell me about Millicent.
Sweetest girl on earth.
Really?
Absolutely. It's well known all over Shropshire.
And she really loves you?
Between you and me, I weigh my words, and I tell you solemnly that that girl is too good for me. She's the nearest thing to an angel that ever came glimmering through the laurels in the quiet evenfall in the garden by the turrets of the old manorial hall. And when I think how I have deceived her, my soul sickens.
Well, have you deceived her?
Not yet, but I'm going to in about 5 minutes. I put in a phone call to Blandings just now, and when I get through, I shall tell her I'm speaking from my hotel room, where I am on the point of going to bed.
You see, said Hugo confidentially, Millicent, though practically perfect in every other respect, is one of those girls who might misunderstand this little night out of mine, did it come to her ears.
I know what you mean. Ronnie's like that.
He must never know.
Secrecy and silence. Thank goodness there's nobody who would tell Millicent, even if they wanted to. Ha! This must be the bringer of the glad tidings, to say my call is through. All set? He asked the page boy, who had threaded his way through the crowd to their table.
Yes, sir.
Hugo rose. Amuse yourself somehow till I return. I shan't be dull, said Sue. She watched him disappear, then leaned back in her seat, watching the dancers. Percy Pilbeam, who'd been hovering in the background, hoping for such an opportunity ever since his arrival at the restaurant, thought he had never seen her looking prettier. He edged his way between the tables and took Hugo's vacated chair. Good evening, he said. She turned and was aware of a nasty-looking little man at her elbow. He seemed to have materialized from nowhere.
May I introduce myself, Miss Brown? Said this blot.
My name is Pilbeam. At the same moment there appeared in the doorway and stood there raking the restaurant with burning eyes the flannel-suited figure of Ronald Overbury Fish.